මාචාරි ජීල් පීරිස් මැතුමා.
ගරු කථානායකතුමනි, ගරු තලතා අතුකෝරල මන්ත්‍රීතුමියට පසු කතා කිරීමට ලැබීම ගැන සතුටු වෙනවා. ගරු කථානායකතුමනි, මේ පාර්ලිමේන්තු න්‍යාය පත්‍රයේ තිබෙන
ප්ලීස් ඔනරබල් රාසමණිකම් විල් කමෙන්ට්ස් ටේක් ද කියන please continue.
ගරු මූලාසනාරූඪ මන්ත්‍රීතුමනි, මේ න්‍යාය පත්‍රයේ තිබෙන පනත් කෙටුම්පත් හතරක්ම ගරු අලි සබ්‍රේ අධිකරණ ඇමතුමා විසින් මේ ගරු සභාවට ඉදිරිපත් කරන ලද පනත්. දණ්ඩ නීති සංග්‍රහය පනත් කෙටුම්පත, බුද්ධිමය දේපළ සංශෝධන පනත් කෙටුම්පත, සාක්ෂි සංශෝධන පනත් කෙටුම්පත, හා ඇප සංශෝධන පනත් කෙටුම්පත. මම කැමති මේ අවස්ථාවේදී එතුමාට සුබ පතන්න, එතුමාගේ මේ වැඩපිළිවෙල අගය කරන්නට. විටින් විට රටක නීතිය, නීති පද්ධතිය ප්‍රතිසංස්කරණය කළ යුතුයි, නවීකරණය කළ යුතුයි. ඒ සඳහා අපේ අලුත් නීති මේ සභාවට ඉදිරිපත් කළා, ඒවා ක්‍රියාත්මක කළ යුතුයි. ඒ සඳහා ගරු අලි සබ්‍රි ඇමතිතුමා, එතුමාගේ පළපුරුද්ද දැනුම් සම්භාරය මේ සම්බන්ධයෙන් යෙදවීම ගැන අපේ කෘතඥතාවය හා ප්‍රණාමය මුලින්ම ප්‍රකාශ කරන්නට කැමති ගරු මූලාසනාරූඪ මන්ත්‍රීතුමනි. දැන් මේ එක් පනතක මාතෘකාවන්නේ ඇප. මම හිතන්නේ ඇප පිළිබඳ අපි විශේෂ අවධානයක් යොමු කළ යුතුයි. අද අපේ බන්ධනාගාරවල ඇතිවලා තිබෙන ලොකු ප්‍රශ්නයක් තමයි රඳවියන්. විශාල සංඛ්‍යාවක් ඒ බන්ධනාගාරවල සිටිනවා. මේකට ප්‍රධාන හේතුවක් තමයි ඇප දිය යුතු පුද්ගලයන්ට ඇප නොදී ඒ පුද්ගලයන් සිරගත කිරීම. ඒක වැරදි ප්‍රතිපත්තියක්, ඒක අපි නිවැරදි කළ යුතු ප්‍රතිපත්තියක්. ඇප පිළිබඳ වර්තමාන නීතිය මේ ගරු සභාව සම්මත කළේ 1997. ඒ කාලේ මම අධිකරණ ඇමති හැටියට කටයුතු කළා. ඒ නීතිය නිර්මාණය කිරීම සම්බන්ධයෙන් මං සෑහෙන දායකත්වයක් ලබා දුන්නා. අපේ නීතිය ඉතාමත් පැහැදිලි. යම්කිසි පුද්ගලයෙකුට විරුද්ධව චෝදනාවක් තියෙනවා නම් ඒ පුද්ගලයාට ඇප ලැබිය යුතුයි විශේෂ අවස්ථා හතරකදී හැර. ඇප ප්‍රතික්ෂේප කරන්න පුළුවන් විශේෂ අවස්ථාවලදී පමණයි. සාමාන්‍ය ප්‍රතිපත්තිය වන්නේ ඇප දීම. ඒකට හේතුව තමයි මේ පුද්ගලයා උසාවියක් විසින් වරදකරුව හැටියට තීරණය කළා නෑ. ඒ නිසා නිර්දෝෂී භාවය පිළිබඳ පූර්වානුක්‍රිය, ඒක අපේ ආණ්ඩුක්‍රම ව්‍යවස්ථාවේ අන්තර්ගත වෙලා තියෙනවා. ඒ මූලධර්මයේ සම්පූර්ණ වාසිය චූදිතයා ලැබිය යුතුයි. 1997 ඇප පිළිබඳ නීතිය සඳහන් වෙලා තිබෙන්නේ මෙන්න මේ විශේෂ අවස්ථා හතරදී පමණයි මේ පුද්ගලයා හිරගෙදරට යවන්න පුළුවන් වන්නේ. පළවෙනි ව්‍යතිරේකය තමයි හේතු තියෙනවා නම් සාධාරණ ලෙස සිටීමට මේ පුද්ගලයා උසාවියට එන්නේ නැහැ කියලා නඩු වහනකොට පලා යෑමට තත්කරයි කියලා. එහෙම අවස්ථාවකදී එයාට අප දෙන්නේ නැහැ. දෙවැන්න තමයි සාක්ෂිකරුවන් බිය ගැන්වීමට. මේ පුද්ගලයා තත්කරයි කියලා සිටීමට සාධාරණ හේතු තියෙනවා නම් එහෙනම් මේ පුද්ගලයා බන්ධනාගාරගත කරන්න පුළුවන්. තුන්වෙනි ව්‍යතිරේකය තමයි සාක්ෂි විනාශ කිරීමට, හෝ විකෘති කිරීමට උත්සාහ දරයි කියලා සිතීමට හේතු තියෙනවා නම් එහෙනම් ඒ පුද්ගලයා ඉරේ යවන්න පුළුවන්. හතරවෙනි එක තමයි ඒ පුද්ගලයා නිදහස් කරලා සමාජයට යවුවොත් සමාජය තුළ විශාල කැළඹීමක් ඇති වෙයි කියලා අපේක්ෂා කිරීමට සාධාරණ පදනමක් තියෙනවා නම් එහෙනම් එවන් පුද්ගලයෙකු බන්ධනාගත කිරීම සුදුසුයි. ඒ හැරෙන්න හිරේට යවන්න බෑ. දැන් අද හුඟක් විනිශ්චයකාරවරුන් ඒ මූලධර්මයට ගරු කරන්නේ නැහැ. මම හිතන්නේ ඒ පිළිබඳ ආකල්පමය වෙනසක් තිබෙන්න ඕනේ විනිශ්චයකාරවරුන් තුල. මෙතන තියෙන එක ප්‍රශ්නයක් තමයි කනිෂ්ඨ විනිශ්චයකාරවරුන්ට යම් කිසි මාර්ගෝපදේශකත්වයක් මෙවන් ප්‍රශ්න සම්බන්ධයෙන් අවශ්‍ය වෙනවා. එක්තරා කාලයක තිබුණා ජජර්ස් ඉන්ස්ටිටියුට්. විනිශ්චයකාරවරුන්ට තමන්ගේ දැනුම නවීන තත්ත්වයන්ට ගැලපෙන පරිදි යළි සකස් කර ගැනීමට ඉතාමත් ප්‍රයෝජනවත් ආයතනයක් තිබුණා. මේ අවස්ථාවේදී සිහිපත් කරන්න ඕනේ දිවංගත ඇන්ටන් සෝසා නැතිවම. ඇන්ටන් සෝසා දිවාරය බලන්න නැතුව රෑ 11ටත් මම දන්නවා. එදා මගේ ශිෂ්‍යයන් ඊට පස්සේ විනිශ්චයකාරු වුණාලා මහාධිකරණයේ විනිශ්චයකාරු වුණා මහේස්ත්‍රාත්වරුන් ඕනෑම වෙලාවක රෑ 11ට ඇන්ටන් සෝසාට කතා කළා ඒ අවශ්‍ය උපදෙස් ලබා ගැනීමේ හැකියාව එදා තිබුණා. ඉතින් ඒ නිසා දැන් අද දැන් අප නීතිය නිදර්ශනයක් හැටියට ගත්තොත් ලොකු විෂමතා එක මහේස්ත්‍රාත්වරේ ක්‍රියා කරන විදිහට නෙමෙයි වෙන මහේස්ත්‍රේක්වරේ ක්‍රියා කරන්නේ. අභිමතය පාවිච්චි කිරීමේදී එකම මිනුම් දණ්ඩක් නැහැ. විවිධත්වයේ විශාල ලෙස තියෙනවා. ඒක අපේ නීති පද්ධතියට හොඳ දෙයක් නෙමෙයි. නීතිය අවිනිශ්චිත භාවයකට පත් වෙනවා. ඒ තත්ත්වය නිවැරදි කිරීමට නම් මං හිතන්නේ අපි යලි ප්‍රාණවත් කළ යුතුයි ඒ ජජර්ස් ඉන්ස්ටිටියුට් වැනි ආයතන. අනික තමයි මම වැඩි වෙලා ගන්න. දැන් ආණ්ඩුක්‍රම ව්‍යවස්ථා සංශෝධනය ගැන සෑහෙන අවධානයක් මේ අවස්ථාවේදී යොමු වෙලා තිබෙනවා. මම හිතන්නේ අපි විශේෂයෙන් කල්පනා කරන්න ඕනේ මානව හිමිකම් නඩු පිළිබඳව. ගරුතලතා අතුකෝරාල මන්ත්‍රීතුමිය සඳහන් කළා අධිකරණයේ ස්වාධීනත්වය මානව හිමිකම් පිළිබඳ අද අපේ නීතියේ විශාල අඩුපාඩුවක් තියෙනවා ඒ සම්බන්ධයෙන්. යම්කිසි පුද්ගලයෙකු උසාවියට යනවා නම් ඒ පුද්ගලයාගේ මානව හිමිකම් උල්ලංඝනය කරා කියන පදනම මත කෙලින්ම ඒ පුද්ගලයාට සිදුවනවා ශ්‍රේෂ්ඨාධිකරණයට යන්න. වෙන උසාවියකට යන්න බෑ. ඒක කිසියෙත් ගැළපෙන දෙයක් නෙවෙයි. ග්‍රාමීය ප්‍රදේශයක වෙසෙන වැඩි මුදල් හදල් නැති පුද්ගලයෙකුට කෙලින්ම තමන්ගේ දුක් ගැන්විල්ල ශ්‍රේෂ්ඨාධිකරණයට යොමු කිරීම අසීරු තත්වයක්. එවන් ක්‍රියාදාමයක් තුළ යුක්තිය ඉෂ්ට වෙයි කියලා සිතන්ට පුළුවන් කමක් නැහැ. විශාල මුදලක් වියදම් කරන්නට සිදෙනවා. අනික තමයි සාක්ෂිකරුවන් කැඳවලා ඒ සාක්ෂිකරුවන්ගෙන් සාක්ෂි ලබා ගැනීමට පුළුවන් කමක් නැහැ. දියුරුම් ප්‍රකාශ පමණයි, ඇෆිඩෙවිට් එවිඩන්ස් පමණයි ඉදිරිපත් කරන්න පුළුවන් වෙන්නේ ශ්‍රේෂ්ඨාධිකරණයට. එතකොට නඩුව පටන් ගන්නෙත් ශ්‍රේෂ්ඨාධිකරණේ, නඩුව අවසාන වෙන්නෙත් ශ්‍රේෂ්ඨාධිකරණේ. The court of first resort, court of last resort. ඒක මම හිතන්නේ අපේ නීති පද්ධතිය තුළ පැහැදිලිව පෙනෙන දුර්වලතාවයක්. වෙන රටවල් වල ඇමරිකානු එක්සත් ජනපදයේ ඉන්දියාවේ එහෙම මානව හිමිකම් පිළිබඳ නඩුව ඉස්සෙල්ලම ගෙන්නේ ඉහළම උසාවියට නෙමෙයි. එතකොට අපේ නීති පද්ධතියත් ඒ විදිහට සංශෝධනය කළ යුතුයි කියලා මම විශ්වාස කරනවා. වෙන උසාවියකට උදාහරණයක් වශයෙන් මහාධිකරණයට ගිහිල්ලා ඒ නඩුව එහි ඉදිරිපත් කළා. ඊට පස්සේ දෙවන අධිරය හැටියට අභියාචන ශ්‍රේෂ්ඨාධිකරණයට ඉදිරිපත් කිරීමට අපි අවකාශ සැලසුවොත් ඒ තුළින් අපේ නීති පද්ධතිය වඩා යහපත් තැනකට ගේන්න පුළුවන් වෙයි කියලා මම විශ්වාස කරනවා. තව එක කරුණක් පමණක් මම සඳහන් කරලා නවතිනවා ගරු මූලාසනාරූඪ මන්ත්‍රීතුමනි. ඒ තමයි අපේ ආණ්ඩුක්‍රම ව්‍යවස්ථාව සංශෝධනය කිරීමේ ප්‍රයත්නය. මං හිතන්නේ සේට වඩා වැදගත් වන්නේ අපේ මැතිවරණ ක්‍රමය වෙනස් කිරීම සම්බන්ධය. වෙන නොයෙක් නොයෙක් මාතෘකා පිළිබඳ විශාල මතභේද ඇතිවන්න පුළුවන්. එකම මතයකට එහෙම අසීරු තත්වයක් වෙන්න පුළුවන්. හැබැයි මේ කාරණය පිළිබඳ මං හිතන්නේ අපේ රටේ පුළුල් මතයක් තියෙනවා. වර්තමාන මැතිවරණ ක්‍රමය සම්පූර්ණයෙන් නුසුදුසුයි කියලා, විශේෂයෙන්ම මනාප ක්‍රමය.
Honorable Minister, you have 2 more minutes.
ඒ මනාප ක්‍රමය නිසා සංග්‍රාමයක් වැනි තත්වයක් ඇතිවෙනවා පක්ෂ තුල. සහෝදරයන් මිත්‍රයන් හැටියට එකට වැඩ කරන ඇමතිවරුන් මන්ත්‍රීවරුන් අතර ලොකු ගැටුම් ඇතිවෙනවා මැතිවරණ කාලයේ. ඒ වෙන්නේ මනාප ක්‍රමය නිසායි. එම නිසා ඒ ක්‍රමය වෙනස් කළා මිශ්‍ර ක්‍රමයක්. ඒ කියන්නේ ඡන්ද කොට්ටාස නියෝජනය කරන මන්ත්‍රීවරුන් හා ප්‍රොපෝෂනල් රෙප්‍රසන්ටේෂන් සමානුපාතික ක්‍රමය අනුව පත්වන මන්ත්‍රීවරුන් ගෙන් යුක්ත මිශ්‍ර ක්‍රමයක් මම හිතනවා අපේ රටට ගැලපෙනවා කියලා. දැන් මේ දැන් තියෙන ක්‍රමයේ යටතේ අතුරු මැතිවරණ නැහැ. ආණ්ඩුවක් අවුරුදු 5ක් බලයේ සිටිනවා. හැබැයි තමන්ගේ බලය උරගා බැලීමට ජනතාව මේක තවදුරටත් අනුමත කරනවද, ජනතාවගේ යම් යම් ප්‍රශ්න තියෙනවද කියලා සොයා බැලීමට එක සුදුසු ක්‍රමයක් තමයි අතුරු මැතිවරණ පැවැත්වීම. අනේක මේ අද තියෙන ක්‍රමය යටතේ මන්ත්‍රීවරයා හා මන්ත්‍රීවරයා නියෝජනය කරන ජනතාව අතර සමීප සම්බන්ධයක් නැහැ. මොරටුව රත්මලාන නියෝජනය කරන මන්ත්‍රීවරයෙක් නැහැ. හැමෝම නියෝජනය කරන්නේ කොළඹ දිස්ත්‍රික්කේ. ඒ සඳහා විශාල මුදලක් වියදම් කරන්නට සිදු වෙනවා. එතකොට පොඩි මිනිහෙකුට දේශපාලනයට ප්‍රවිෂ්ඨ වීමේ තියෙන ඉඩකඩ ඉතාමත් සීමිතයි. ඒක මම දකින්නේ ප්‍රජාතන්ත්‍රවාදී ක්‍රමයක් හැටියට. එම නිසා මේ ප්‍රශ්නය පිළිබඳ අපේ ජනතාවගේ මතය විමසුවත් මම හිතන්නේ සෑම දෙනාම එකඟ වෙයි මේ ක්‍රමය අපේ රටට ගැලපෙන්නේ නැහැ. ඒ පිළිබඳ වෙනසක් කළ යුතුයි කියලා. එම නිසා ආණ්ඩුක්‍රම ව්‍යවස්ථා සංශෝධනය එන අවුරුද්දේ අපි කරනවා නම් ප්‍රමුඛත්වයේ දිය යුතුයි. මම හිතන හැටියට මැතිවරණ ක්‍රමය වෙනස් කිරීමට මේ විශාල කර්තව්‍යයක් ගරු අධිකරණ ඇමති අලි සබ්රි මැතිතුමාට තිබෙන්නේ. එතුමාට මේ රස්සාව අවශ්‍ය නැහැ. එතුමා විශාල කැපවීමක් කළා තමයි මේ කර්තව්‍යයට.
Honorable Minister, please wind up. Your time is over.
කිසිම සැකයක් නැහැ. එතුමාගෙන් විශාල සේවයක් අධිකරණ ක්ෂේත්‍රයට සිදු වෙයි කියලා එතුමාට සුභපතමින් මම නවතිනවා ගරු මූනාරසනාල මන්ත්‍රීතුමනි.
Thank you. Honorable M.A. Sumandiran, you have 30 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Presiding Member. I am glad to speak on the third reading, particularly on the votes of the Ministry of Justice today, when my good friend at the bar, Honorable Ali Sabri, is the Minister of Justice. We've had a long association. He occupies a very prestigious post, that of a Minister of Justice. In the olden days, it was occupied by somebody who was from the Senate, from the upper house, because it was a prestigious office to hold. However, I think he may feel like the Minister of Ports and Shipping of Afghanistan today. I say this, I'm not a minister. I say this because having listened to the exchange that took place when the former Minister of Justice was speaking between the government benches and the main opposition party, one couldn't escape wondering that they were both letting down the judiciary. Because when you accuse the other side of meddling with the judiciary and cite judgments that have been delivered by the judiciary and imply that those judgments were wrong, were influenced by the executive of the day, then you are actually both are letting down the judiciary. Perhaps that is a true state of affairs in the country, because judges continue their tenure. Governments come, governments go, but they continue. And if you in the house today argue as to which point of time a particular judgment was given and what the political implication of that is, then you are both pointing a finger at the judiciary, and I'm only worried that what you were doing was perhaps even justified. I'm also happy to follow the Honorable Professor G.L. Pieris. He made a point in his speech and said that the fundamental rights jurisdiction must be now given to lower courts where people in their own localities can have access to. I suppose when in the 1978 constitution it was given to the Supreme Court, it was a new jurisdiction, and perhaps to establish benchmarks, it was given to the apex court. But he is right. So many years have passed, 42 years have passed. Long ago, this should have been given to the provincial high courts at least. There is another reason why that should be done, and he said it in his own words. He said it is a court of first instance, court of first resort, and the last resort too. Now, there lies a problem when that is a court of first instance and also the court of last resort. We find a new phenomenon where judges feel that they don't have to be accountable in the sense that they don't have to give reasons. I know that in certain instances, reasons are not necessary. But in today's world, when judges themselves find fault with administrators in exercise, when they exercise writ jurisdiction, etc., that the duty to give reasons is of paramount importance, they themselves don't do that. And courts that are below the Supreme Court are generally careful to give reasons, or very careful when they deliver judgments, because they know there is somebody above them who might review their decision. But when it is the Supreme Court, that fear is absent. And when that is the first and the last court, surely there is something that is wrong. And I welcome the Honorable Minister's suggestion that the fundamental rights jurisdiction must now be given to perhaps the provincial high court, or even a court of appeal if it can sit in the provinces. The issue of justice in this country is a subject that paints a bleak picture of the country. We have so many emblematic cases where people have struggled for justice for decades on end and are still struggling for justice. And that's not a good thing to say, but that is a fact. If I start listing out names of such persons, it's a long, long list. And most of the time, it is due to the fact that there is political interference into the affairs of the judiciary. There is a book written by three authors, Jayanthadi Almeida Gunaratna, Kishali Pinto Jayawardena, and Gihan Gunatilaka, called The Judicial Mind in Sri Lanka, Responding to the Protection of Minority Rights, published by Law and Society Trust in January 2014, which is very revealing as to the judicial attitudes, particularly towards the minority. And in this, they start from the very beginning, when the Citizenship Act was passed, and the case of Mudannayaka versus Kodakanpilla versus Mudannayaka, and then Kodiswaran case, etc., and come down until recent times, when issues of minority people's rights have been dealt with very differently to that of other cases. We saw a recent phenomenon when the Honorable Minister of Justice himself, in desperation, tweeted. I mean, all he could do was to tweet about the burial rights of the Muslims in Sri Lanka. To no avail, Honorable Minister, because even that matter was summarily dismissed, albeit by a majority decision. At least one judge agreed that there was something to look into, but no reasons given yet again. Very serious issues have been summarily dealt with like that. There are other cases where not even investigations have been done. Now, I can cite the Valikada massacre of 1983. Was anyone punished for that? No. When people who are in state custody get killed in custody, surely people can be held responsible. Now, this has happened now from Valikada in 1983 to Mahara a few days ago. This is happening. That's not a good thing. Yeah. Bindu Nuweva Bindu Weva in 2000, 27 people were killed. Vavuniya prison in July 2012, where Nimala Ruban and Dil Rukshan were killed. I can list out a whole list of names. Yeah, Kalutara. But the point is, I'm talking about custodial deaths. I'm talking about custodial deaths of a government that calls itself a democratic government, government that says that you have the best judicial system in the country. How can custodial deaths go unpunished? I'm not saying that it happened. It shouldn't happen. But even when it happens, it goes unpunished. That's the greatest slur to a justice system of any country. I think it was Winston Churchill who said, the soul of a nation is judged by how you treat your prisoners. How are prisoners treated? I mean, the Vavuniya case that I mentioned, Nimala Ruban and Dil Rukshan, they were held there on suspicion. Young men, they were beaten to death. Several of their limbs, there were several fractures in their limbs when they were beaten. There were fundamental rights cases filed in respect of Nimala Ruban. Leave to proceed was refused by a person who occupied the office of Chief Justice and had to then leave that post. Now you have made him permanent representative to the UN. You can't find a better person. He made comments from the bench that is recorded in the published works by several organizations, even this book that I mentioned, that should never have come from any judge. Now, Kumaraburam. Now I'm going to areas where there are, it wasn't custodial deaths, but nevertheless, large numbers of people were killed. 24 were killed in Kumaraburam. Mirusuvil, a few people were killed. One person was punished, but he was recently pardoned. What's the message? What's the message that the country gives? Even in the rarest of rare cases, where you want to show that something is happening and there is a conviction in the original court, either the appeal court releases the people, or even if that doesn't happen, there's an executive pardon given. The Honorable Leader of the House responded to Honorable Tharatha Athukorala about Honorable Sivanesathura Chandrakantan's case and said 4.5 years he was in remand. 4.5 years. He thought that was a long time. I do concede 4.5 years in remand is a long time. But what about the Tamil political prisoners? He used that word. He said, Deshapalna Sirakarwat, Lesa Salakanwada Kela Aywa. What has happened to the actual Tamil political prisoners? I'm not talking about Sivanesathura Chandrakantan, who was accused, who is accused of murdering Tamil National Alliance parliamentarian Joseph Parrajasingam on the 24th December night when he was attending mass in the Batiklaw Cathedral. But what about the actual political prisoners? How long have they been in remand? Why are you not rising for the rights of those persons? They have been in remand for 20 years, 25 years, some over 30 years. Now, why can't they be released? Why doesn't the Honorable Attorney General consent to bail in that case? Why does he consent to bail to only Sivanesathura Chandrakantan under PTA? In one case, the AG takes a position that he can consent to bail. In another case, he says, no, under the Prevention of Terrorism Act, under Section 7(1) proviso, in the High Court, I have no discretion to consent to bail. Why these double standards? I'm talking about double standards in all of these cases. What about the Trinco 5? What about the drink of five? You gave assurance after assurance after assurance to various international fora. No justice for those five students. What about the Mutur ACF workers, 17 of them? What about the 11 youth who were abducted in Colombo? Where is justice for all of that? I mentioned Joseph Parrajasingam. What about Raviraj? What about Sivanesan? Three honorable MPs of this house murdered while they were sitting MPs. Raviraj's case came up before the High Court in Colombo before a single speaking jury. Under the PTA, there is no jury trial. But he was charged for murder as well under the penal code just to enable a jury trial. And after a long trial, they were acquitted. The Attorney General has appealed. And the persons who were accused and arraigned as accused in the High Court were persons who were naval intelligence officers. The Attorney General himself indicted them. So, the involvement of the state, and particularly that of the intelligence component of the state, was admittedly conceded by the Honorable Attorney General himself. It's not only these cases, even others, Lasantha Vikramathunga, Keith Noya, Pragit Teknaligoda, and scores of Tamil journalists who were killed. Long list of names, there are about 34. No investigation has even commenced in respect of one. Only one, I think, there was some magisterial inquiry and that was the end of it. Why is the state behaving in this way? Why is the judicial arm of the state like this? And it is because of this that we have consistently said that we have no confidence in the judiciary. Are we to be blamed? Are we to be blamed? When you yourself trade allegations against each other. Just hours ago, you did that. How are we to be blamed when we are always, almost always, at the butt end of justice? So that is why, in respect of serious crimes that have been committed in this country, that is why, in respect of international crimes that have been committed in this country, we have asked for international involvement, international inquiry, international judicial processes. How can you deny that? How can you say no when we can lay bare before you, not only we, you yourself did that a little while ago. You laid before the entire world the depths to which your judicial system had sunk. You were, you know, so vociferous. You thought you were accusing the other side, but you were in fact accusing the judiciary. And as I said, justifiably so. Take some recent examples. And I want to pick one example of a colleague of mine, Hijaz Hizbullah, a brilliant lawyer. Honorable Minister of Justice knows that very well. A brilliant young lawyer. Denied justice for 8 months. What are you doing for 8 months? If you had evidence that he was involved in anything at all, you could have charged him with that. What are you doing for 8 months? All kinds of false allegations were made against him. When his house was searched and he was arrested, Honorable Minister, they took away two of his case briefs. not even in a court of law, can questions be asked with regard to communication between client and attorney, and you know that very well. There are only two instances of privilege, one husband-wife and the other is attorney-client privilege. That's how sacrosanct communication between a lawyer and his client is. But they took even his client's files. Can't he have clients? Can't he handle cases for people who are later found to have committed other crimes? Is a lawyer to be blamed? All right, even if you did that, in those files, if you found anything, you could have brought that to light. You could have produced him before court. Nothing. Nothing to date. All kinds of spurious allegations are being made. Something about a school, that he was involved in some school. Now that school is still functioning. Nobody else has been arrested in respect of that school. That school is functioning. Everybody is happily running that school. But he is detained for involvement in that school. I mean, funny state of affairs. Funny ministry. He was said to have got assistance from Kata Charity. Now, Kata Charity is still running. He's still involved. State is beneficiary as well. No, so what is wrong with Kata Charity? If you can have it, you can still use it. You accuse him of being involved with Kata Charity. There is not an iota of it. I have not spoken about Hijaz Hizbullah until today. For good reason. If there was something against him and there were investigations, let the investigators be free to find evidence against him. But after 8 months, his wife just gave birth to a child. He hasn't been able to even see his wife. Access to lawyers have been denied. I know you will say it was given sketchily here and there, given with a police officer sitting there and writing down every word that is spoken. Is that, I mean, you are a trained lawyer, right? Is that access? I'm picking one case, one emblematic case, to show how many thousands more are suffering like this. I'm picking that case because he's a lawyer. If you treat a lawyer like that, how do we expect you to treat anybody else any better? A lawyer who is well known, a lawyer who is regarded as a brilliant advocate in our courts, is being treated like this. Any other minister wouldn't want to don the hat of Minister of Justice at a time like this. They would resign and go home. That is why I said you must be feeling like the minister in Afghanistan of ports and shipping. That's the kind of state this country is in with regard to justice. Take the independent commissions. Those commissions are supposed to be independent. By the acts that this legislature has passed, by that word, it means that the tenure of the members who are appointed to it is secure. There is a removal procedure. There is a removal procedure by this house for cause. But what's happening? You think you are in some 18th century where people hold office only during your pleasure. What's the meaning of independent commission then? What's happening to the Human Rights Commission? There are persons whose tenure goes well beyond. Why are you putting pressure on them to resign? Why are you trying to appoint people while you have sitting members in that commission? This happened in the Eastern Province. The Eastern Province Public Service Commission was there. And the new governor went and appointed another person as the chairman of the Public Service Commission. Fortunately, we were able to go to the writ court and get a quo warranto on that man and redress it. Next thing we know is that they've all been sacked. She doesn't have powers to sack an independent commission. What's the point of having an independent public service commission in the province if the governor can sack persons like that? Honorable Surendra Raghavan is not here. He tried that in Jaffna and failed when he was in the northern province and failed. Now, the latest from yesterday, we are seeing this news about the Public Utilities Commission of Sri Lanka. I would have liked the Honorable Vasudeva Nanayakara to be here when I spoke on this. He wrote to the Prime Minister. He wrote to the, as Minister for Water Supply and Utilities, he wrote to the Prime Minister and said this is an important commission. But what happened? The Secretary to the Treasury says, we have abolished this commission. How can you abolish a commission that is set up by law? PUCASL was set up by law in 2002 by Act of Parliament. And it says it's an independent commission. This is executive diktats. Perhaps work like this. The president doesn't like something, even if it was passed by parliament, he says, and get rid of it. As he said, whatever I say, my words are the circular. That's why he says, Sir Hewler. He is now called Sir Hewler. So,
Honorable Member, you have two more minutes.
Thank you. That is how things happen today. So PUCSL members have been asked to resign now suddenly. Now why are they being asked to resign? And very serious. This is very serious. Secretary to the Treasury calls and tells them to resign and threatens them. If not, there will be a parliamentary procedure like what happened to Shirani Bandaranaike. Persons who, have done well in the industry, who have some standing in these industries, give up much to come and serve on these regulatory commissions. They don't want to be dragged through mud. They don't want to be victimized politically like this. So they will resign and go. But what happens to the governance? What happens to all of these for through ages, through decades, this parliament has established laws so that governance is better, that regulatory functions are done by independent persons. You may not like it, but this is not something new, not something surprising. The executive generally doesn't like regulators. But that is desirable. That's the way it ought to be, and that's the way this parliament has willed that it should be. Now, when you behave like this, and you are doing it so blatantly, no hiding it even, so blatantly, the new Minister for Prison Management. Now, all this time...
Honourable Member, your time is over. Please wind up.
I'm winding up. It was called prison reform. But the moment Honourable Ratwatta was appointed, it has been given an appropriate name that suits him well, prison management. And with your name, right, people know how you will manage the prisons. And shivers run down the spine of every prisoner when they hear your name. Thank you.
Order, please. Commit. No, sorry, we don't have time. Order, please. Committee is suspended till 1 p.m. for lunch. Thank you.